Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and we've got an engaging episode for you today. This was supposed to air last week, but we didn't actually have time to get it recorded until just a couple of days ago. I'm recording the intro on Wednesday the 14th as I try to make sure and hit our upload deadline tonight so you can get your new episode tomorrow on the 15th. Who knew podcasting could be such a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants situation? That said, I don't want to get too much into the insane confirmation hearings for Amy Comey Barrett, but when asked if voter intimidation was wrong, her reply was, "I can't characterize the facts in a hypothetical situation." Even if she believes that it is hypothetical, would it not still be wrong? Or how about when she just didn't answer the question when asked if every president should make a commitment to the peaceful transition of power? Does this really not bother half of our country? I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, we're all Americans. Alright, that's enough for now. I'm running low on time and I'm going to try not to share too much in this intro, simply because I truly hope you all give it a listen. This was an amazing interview with one of the most fascinating people that I know. Sean Beeman is the owner and founder of Genesis Farms, and he has more stories to tell than we could even try to get through, but he's already agreed to come back on, so you'll be hearing from him again. In this episode, you're not only going to learn some valuable information about cannabis and the amazing healing ability of Rick Simpson's oil, but you're also going to laugh along the way. Keep your ears open for the Michael Vick prison connection, but you definitely won't want to miss out on the Grateful Dead or Cannabis Cowboy stories either. I hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Now, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. First and foremost, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep striving to provide the best content that I can. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, don't forget about our Patreon page, where you'll get access to exclusive content and deals just for our dedicated fans. As for the other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only, high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO among many other amazing products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And you're going to hear all about that in today's episode. But last but not least, we have a new sponsor this week, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I know that every podcast says that, but that's because it really does help spread the word and give us a little bit more visibility. You can also support us on our Patreon or connect with us on social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just a beginning to what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state, their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner both coming back for more. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges soon. Our new sponsor is the Caramel Corn Company. Caramel corn the way it was meant to be. Made from premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches, and completely gluten-free. The flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, white morsel macadamia, spicy sriracha, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, raspberry caramel apple, and chocolate drizzle. I can't say enough how delicious this caramel corn is. I wouldn't buy it from any other source. You can find Caramel Corn Company products for sale at Portland area market of choice locations, and when it gets stocked back up, maybe it'll be online again. Visit www.caramelcorncompany.com and get more information today. Remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community. Last but not least, Awaken Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vape pens since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no modern medical pills helped alleviate the symptoms. After having tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was actually a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. And despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our three varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with that custom blended terpene effect. Check back at www.awakenvapes.com and be the first online orders of our high-demand Delta 8 cartridges coming in stock here soon. Use the coupon code PODCAST20 at checkout all this month for 20% off your entire order. That's PODCAST20 for 20% off. Welcome to Awakened Exchanges. For those in our audience who are a little unfamiliar with you, why don't you tell us your name and a little bit about what you do?
Thanks for having me on your show, John. My name is Sean Beam, and I'm the owner of Genesis Farms. We're a recreational producer here in Oregon.
And what kind of products do you produce?
So our specialty is Rick Simpson Oil. That's the main focus of my company, is producing therapeutic products, RSO and tinctures and topicals. But I also have my extraction endorsements, so we're doing a lot of the recreational products also, the distillate and dabs and diamonds and sauce and things like that. But my passion really is in the therapeutic side.
And how did you first get involved with cannabis?
Well, I've used cannabis since I was a teenager to help with my migraines. And then in 96, when the compassionate use laws came out in California, I was one of the first people to get a card. So I've been involved on the legal side since conception, and have, you know, followed the course over the past 20 some years to what it's become today. It's been an interesting ride.
Yeah, I imagine. Now, when you first got your card, wasn't there a story about the Genesis name as well?
When we first started, so my mentor, Robert Schmidt, also known as a cannabis cowboy, or we affectionately call him Duke. Duke was fighting a cultivation case at the time that the Compassionate Use Act came out, and his legal team suggested to the courts that rather than trying to prosecute him, that they appoint him the state producer, so that there was a legal route for these brand-new marijuana patients to have access. So we started growing on large scale, and we're the first legitimate source for these stores that were starting to pop up all over, like Harborside and so forth. We're the legal place for them to obtain their medicine. We're also a legal dispensary for those with cards. When we first started out, it was just Genesis 129, which is a reference from the Bible. Basically, every seed-bearing herb shall be your meat.
And, I love that one.
So Genesis 129 was Duke's, was the dispensary side of it. Then as we started doing large cultivation, we had to form another company called Genesis Farms, which managed all the farms that were in Northern California. And it just blew up quicker than you can imagine. From 96 until 2002, the feds were hands-off, and we were doing a pretty good job on educating law enforcement, educating the public. And in September of 2002, the feds decided to show up one early morning, raided one of our farms, arrested Duke and a couple of the farmhands that were there. Long story short, he ended up taking a 41-month sentence in Leavenworth for cultivation, and that's where the feds set precedent on the fact that they have their powers supersede the state's powers.
What a fucking joke.
It is what it is. It's part of the story.
Yeah. So, how did he handle all that? Did he make it back out of there?
Or? He did. I mean, he did his time. He released his bed to Michael Vick.
No
which
shit.
Which is kind of funny. He's still kind of PTSD'd from the event.
Absolutely.
So he's not really into the cannabis anymore. He's not into the production side of it. He still uses it, of course. He's, you know, an old man in pain, so he still uses cannabis. But he's not in the industry anymore. He's just too PTSD'd out from it.
And after the raid, what did you do?
I was fortunate enough to not be there when the raid happened.
Thank God.
I was back in the Midwest taking care of an old workman's comp case. So I'd left just a few days prior to go to the Midwest to take care of that. And then I heard the news. When I came back to California, you know, there was nothing left. They had literally gutted the business, taking all the vehicles, all the bank accounts, all the cannabis, everything. So I decided I found a job up in Oregon because it was also the time of the .com disaster. So I found a good job up in Oregon. And my to-be wife that at the time and I moved up here, and I started working in Oregon. Oregon came out with their medical laws in 98, so we were here in 02, and I got my card, my wife got her card, and we started growing on small scale. In 2005, I was diagnosed with hepatitis C, pretty late stage. By 2010, Western medicine had given up on me, and about that time, I'd seen the video Run from the Cure, the Rick Simpson story. And, you know, I didn't really know what to think when I first saw that, you know, because cannabis had been just a, for lack of a better term, a recreational product. And yes, it did give me some therapy. It did help my migraines. It did help, but that wasn't really the motives. And I saw that video, and back in the day, Rick Simpson used to put his home phone number on the website. So I called him up a couple of times, told him that I was a cannabis producer. He told me what to go get. So I went to the, you know, store and bought all the tools that I needed and the solvent, and came home and had it all. And, you know, I still was kind of apprehensive to take, you know, a pound of my homegrown and dump a bunch of alcohol on it. And I called him again, and in the midst of our conversation, as soon as he found out that I had the cannabis and the alcohol and everything except for the courage, he looked at me, he said to me, "Sean, the only thing you have left to lose is your disease. Don't fucking call me again," and hung up the phone.
Amen.
And that's what I needed. It pushed me over the edge. You know, from my first dose of oil, I knew it was going to be life-changing. From the hepatitis, I was in what they call fibromyalgia. I just call it incredible pain.
My patient had the same.
Well, my whole body hurt. I mean, I tell people it felt like I moved a four-bedroom house by myself the day before. Everything hurt, including my earlobes. From my first dose of and I was jaundiced. I was as yellow as the sun. My eyeballs were yellow. My skin was yellow. And I was extremely bloated. I was 300-plus pounds.
That was 10 years ago.
That was a little over 10 years ago. In the first 90 days of taking oil, and I was eating a gram a day, which was pretty uncomfortable for the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, it is.
But I, like I said, I didn't have anything to lose other than the disease, and I literally was fighting for my life. So I just started eating at about a gram a day, and I was pretty uncomfortable for a little while. But the first day I got out of bed, I stepped out in the backyard to do my morning ritual of smoking a cigarette and having a cup of coffee, and I was observing my body and how incredibly loaded I was, and I fumbled my cigarette and dropped it, and I bent over and I picked it up and took a drag off it before I realized that I just bent over without pain. And I did a self-analysis, and sure enough, my pain was gone. So day one, my fibromyalgia pain was gone. Within the first week, my jaundice was gone. Within the first 90 days, I'd shed 110 pounds.
Fuck!
So I knew I was on my path to healing, and I could see it. A few months later, I went in, and prior to RSO, I was grade 4 stage 3 liver cirrhosis and inflammation, which is near death. A few months after I started the oil, I went in and let them do a biopsy, and they confirmed that complete health had been restored, grade 1 stage 1. You know,
congratulations, right?
Best news. The worst news I ever heard was the day the doctor told me I had a day or two to live, a year or two to live, and that literally changed my head. A few months later, when he looked at me and he said, "Well, now you're going to die from something else," that was the best news I ever had.
That is just fucking amazing. Well, you and I actually met in 2006 or so. You walked me through my first grow, taught me about soil, taught me about a lot of shit, to be honest with you. And that was through Oregon Green Free.
Yeah.
How'd you get involved there?
Before recreational laws came into play, it was purely medical in this state. And for only part of that time were there dispensaries. So from 2002 until whenever
2011, 12? Yeah, and whenever, even those were.
Yeah, it was quite a while. Whenever they finally opened up stores, it was just patients helping patients. And I came to Oregon with, you know, the ability to teach people how to grow simply at home, had a simple super soil recipe that only required water, and, you know, walking through, getting a light, building a little environment. I think we even did that at your house.
Absolutely.
Would help people build a suitable environment so that they could produce their own medicine, and walking through the grows and...
My first colas were bigger than my forearms, and I'm not a small person, so yeah, I feel you.
Well, your first grow is always your best grow.
Why is that?
Because you don't know anything.
You don't mess with it too much?
Exactly. The second grow, you start to play with it. By the third or fourth, you know everything. And it's not until you get 30 years down the road like me where you'll say things like, you know, "I don't know how to grow. Mother Nature knows how to grow. I'm just a life support."
I love that. That's a good line. So I know personally dozens of people that you helped out through there, and I don't remember you ever turning anybody away.
Yeah, I'd help if I could. You know, I was more than capable of pulling more than enough out of my little closet with my little two light grow to take care of myself and help out my friends, and then I would, you know, help people out, and they would pay it forward. You know, I helped you learn to grow, and I remember you helping people out. And it wasn't that I wanted to get paid back. I wanted to see it paid forward.
I still do, because I still pass on that information today.
And that's really what the medical program was about, was us coming together as a community, helping each other, leaning on each other, and surviving together.
So when did that turn into a larger medical grow and transition into recreation?
Well, from the time we got here in 02 until 2010, I just had a, you know, a small scale, couple thousand watt closet grow at home, which produced, you know, a few pounds every couple months.
I remember he's saying small scale. To me, it was like the first introduction to pot. I just seen this giant room full of plants. It was did not look so small to me, but it was now looking back at it.
Well, you know, in my mind, coming from where, from California, where we had, you know, large outdoor plants in the thousands, having 4 or 6 plants in my closet was pretty small scale.
They were giant.
they produced enough. And then I just, you know, followed the laws. Then eventually we had medical dispensaries, so I started putting my RSO and flowers in the med dispensaries. I got all the licensing needed for that. Then I guess it was 15 when we got the recreational laws, so I flipped from med to a rec producer, which allowed me to grow on an even larger scale. Now I have a tier 2 garden, which is 40,000 square feet. This year's a couple thousand plants.
How's this year's doing? I know it's been weather-wise not so great.
You know, the smoke we had a little while ago wasn't good for the plants. You know, a lot of people are afraid of the ash that got on the plants, but really what it was the ash in the air blocked the sun, so the plants thought it was a week of straight darkness, and they just didn't grow. But this is Oregon. You know, it's raining out today a little bit, but then we got a week of sun coming, so...
That's true.
You never can tell.
You're always good at rolling with the punches, though.
Well, you know, you can't dictate what Mother Nature's going to do. You just have to You know, adjust and adapt.
Absolutely. So, before you got into cannabis, what were some of your early influences? What kind of things did you do with life?
Well, after I got out of high school, I did a couple years in the military.
I did not know that, actually.
Yeah. Yep. A couple years in the Army. Got out, lived in Northern California with my parents. I opened up a computer shop in San Rafael, which is just north of San Francisco. Opened up an Apple shop, actually.
Really?
A Macintosh shop. And
what year was that?
Probably 80s? 87, 80, probably 88 I opened up the shop.
That's impressive.
And that was cool. Had a retail storefront right on 4th Street in San Rafael. And that's what I did for a long time. I, you know, made my success in IT. And then when we came to Oregon, IT is what brought me up to Oregon. I came up here to get a job at Dell Computers in 2002, and I kept that job until it moved to El Salvador in 2008. Decided to not follow it.
That's probably a wise decision.
Yeah. And then my wife was just wrapping up her master's degree up in Eugene, so we were living in Roseburg at the time, and she was driving to Eugene to finish.
Hell of a commute.
It was, but my job was there in Roseburg. Once my job left, we decided to move up here to Eugene.
You were moving here right as I was heading into prison.
Yeah. Yeah, it was about the same time. Yep. I think we were already here when you were...
I visited your first place at least once or twice.
And, like I said, IT was what brought me here. And then I had my personal grow going on, and then in 2010, when I came to RSO, I realized that, you know, a few pounds in a closet wasn't enough, so I talked with a friend and did a little 50-plant medical grow the first year to see how it went, and it blew it up to 100 the next year. People were afraid to go past the 99 plant count per location, which is kind of silly, because I know the federal laws. It's not 99 plants in a garden. It's if you've grown over 99 plants in your lifetime. So
I think most of us have reached that number.
We have, which actually, in the eyes of the government, we're considered patriots. We're one step worse than a terrorist. We threaten to overthrow our government from the inside rather than the outside.
How dare we?
And like I said, in 15, I started the recreational side, got a tier 2 garden, and started large scale production. So I went from a couple plants in my garage, in my closet, to, you know, 50 plants, to 100 plants, to a few 99 plant grow sites. And then rec came, so it went to 40,000 square feet.
How many plants do you estimate you have out there, give or take?
Couple thousand.
A little bit more than those 99.
Yeah, and all at one location, which makes management a lot easier rather than having managed many different sites. But it's different now. You know, in the med days, it was my cannabis. I grew it. I could give it to the patients. I could give it to my friends. I could give it to whoever. I could smoke it myself. I could do what I wanted with it because it was mine.
Now you can't even take any of your stuff really without going through a fairly significant process to even smoke your own weed at this point.
Yeah, I don't even consider it mine. I consider it the state's cannabis. They just give me the privilege of, you know, growing it, paying for it, tending to it, delivering it to market, without the threat of going to prison for it anymore.
I do like the no threat.
Yeah, everything is tracked.
Seed to sale?
Yeah.
All through Metric at this point?
Or? Yeah, everything's tracked through Metric. And all the way from the garden to through the lab to the store. So I do have a cannabis producer license, which is my farm. I have a cannabis wholesale license. And I also have a cannabis extraction and processing extraction endorsement.
Now, you've got a fairly decent lab over there, too. You've been setting that up for the last few years. How's... How's that work, and who do you have helping?
Oh, it's become another one of my passions. You know, my wife likes diamonds. I like stainless steel.
You can make both there, so hey.
True. I don't think she likes the diamonds that we make, but... So yeah, I have you know, different crews over there. I have a crew that makes the RSO for me. I have a crew that makes the rec products for me. We also offer a trimming service for those in the OLCC under my wholesale license. So I have a lot of farms that will bring their flowers to my wholesale license, and then we have trimmers that can do a really good job. Really efficiently with the tools that we use and the processes that we use. We can really do it better, faster, and cheaper than a farmer can do it himself.
It's experience and time. If somebody specializes, I mean...
And tools.
Yeah. You know,
we have the right tools on board.
I love it. So I want to ask a question because I know a little bit about here. Now, back in San Rafael, when you had the storefront, you were also doing some freelance IT, weren't you?
You're talking about the dead?
You know I am.
So, well, it definitely wasn't freelance. I got a call one day. So I was right on 4th Street, which just happened to be right around the corner from Grateful Dead Productions. And I got a call one day from one of the ladies there saying that they wanted to order a bunch of computers from me, which I was more than happy to take the order. And
I bet.
Called them. I said that, you know, the computers had arrived, and they asked me if I could come and install them. And I told them that, you know, there was a service charge for that, but I'd be more than happy to. So I went down and I installed them, and this was, you know, late 80s, so not very many people were computer literate, especially the old deadheads that were used to you know, filling all the merchandise orders from literally, you know, pen and paper and ledgers.
You had to set it all up from scratch.
Yeah, I brought the computer system into the office and into the travel agency, and then eventually the band members wanted them in their houses and got them in the studios, and it was kind of cool. I got to train them on how to use the computers. They contracted me for a week to be on site at the Grateful Dead office so that I could walk them through any of the problems that they had come up against to learn how to use this newfangled electronic stuff. And I finished my week, and they wrote me a check, and it was the one time that I said, you know, I wanted to go get Jerry's autograph. So I rolled up to his house with my paycheck and said, looked him in the eye, and I said, "Hey, buddy, this is the only time I'm ever going to ask for your autograph. Will you sign this?" And I handed him my paycheck, and he just kind of laughed. He signed my paycheck, and I took it to the bank. And then the next Monday, they called me up, and they still had more questions. And I told them, you know, that their week was up. And they said, "Well, we don't have a problem putting you on salary just to be able to answer our phone calls." So
that's awesome.
I was the IT guy on call from 89 until Jerry died in 95.
Man. And then medical went next year after that.
What do you mean?
The medical cannabis stuff in California.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. That's, yeah, 96. End of 96 is when Compassionate Use came out. Yeah, I wish Jerry got to see those days.
Oh, I'd like to think he's still looking down somewhere, smiling out there.
Yeah, he really was. He was a good friend of mine. I tell people that, you know, Duke taught me originally how to be an outlaw back in the day, and then taught me how to embrace compassion and cannabis and the legitimate side of the industry. And Jerry really taught me to be humble. He had the most everything. He had the most money, the most fame, the nicest car. He had it all. But he was the most humble person I had ever met. And growing up in Marin County, where everybody has $200 shoes and a spare BMW in their garage, it was all about ego. And I really bought into that my whole life growing up until I got out of the Army and came home and started working for myself. And when I met Jerry, it was just such the opposite of the Marin County vibe. You know, like I said, he was as successful and as famous as it gets.
Absolutely.
And was the most humble person I'd ever meet. And then through that gig, I got jobs working for quite a few of the musicians, which was kind of cool. Some of them were nice to work for. Some of them were not.
Musicians?
You know, some of them had huge egos. And, you know, we used to joke with the dead that if I was working, they weren't playing. So when I was getting computers set up, they weren't playing. When I was teaching them how to use the computers, they weren't playing. Once I taught them something to do, then I'd sit down, shut up, and they'd start playing and playing with the toys and see how it worked for them. A lot of the musicians that I worked for, you know, thought they knew what they wanted. They'd tell me they want this, this, and this, and so I'd do it. And some of them would listen to my recommendations, and some of them wouldn't. And it's just like, you know, you take your car to the mechanic, and you tell him you want your muffler changed. He'll do it, but it might not be the issue.
Absolutely.
And you might not get the performance boost that you're looking for.
Well, that's the thing, is people think they're smarter than what is always around there sometimes.
Some people do.
Now, when you were with the Dead, I know now one of the big things... One of the annual things we try and get to is the country fair. Didn't happen this year, obviously. But they were a big part of starting that, weren't they?
They were.
Yeah. Did you ever come up here for that while you were working?
No.
When was your first year up here?
I didn't do any traveling. So I was, you know, I was based out of Sandrafel. I worked probably a few hundred shows, but only those local to the Bay Area. The Henry J. Kaiser New Year's Eve shows, the Coliseum, the... Cow Palace, Shoreline, all around the Bay Area. They played many shows, but if it involved getting on a plane, I didn't need to be there.
I get you.
I told people I was a technician. I wasn't a musician. I wasn't really a deadhead. I liked the music. I liked the band members, but...
You weren't following them around the country in a van.
I definitely was not following them around in a van. And it was fun, you know, going to see the shows. My job was to make sure that the computer systems came on. I was the IT guy on the soundboard, so I sat on the best seat in the house by myself and got paid really well to go see Grateful Dead shows.
Could be worse things.
Yeah, and it was fun. It was really good money, and it led to a lot of other... You know, prospective jobs. Once people heard that I was Jerry Garcia's consultant, then a lot of the other musicians wanted me.
Builds trust a whole lot more when you see that lasting relationship.
Yeah.
Did you have any other outside hobbies or interests you were pursuing during all this?
You know, I was a workaholic.
I've seen that in you.
I've always been a workaholic. So, you know, I ran my shop. I did my consulting. I mean, literally to the point where I think it was 6 or 7 years continuous that I'd sold computers to people where on Christmas Day I would show up at their house and set up the gifts that they got for their children pro bono. But I mean, that's how much of a workaholic I was. I managed to work on Christmas Day 7 years in a row, because I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed teaching people how to use computers. I enjoyed watching the light bulbs go off. I enjoyed helping them. I still enjoy helping people. And the financial side of it wasn't awful.
Yeah, I imagine. We talked a little bit about how you got to this point in the career, but I would love to hear a little bit more about the actual products, because you've been... The Rick Simpson oil was the main kickstart, but you've developed a few other things that are doing pretty well as well.
We do. So we have RSO. We have three different types of RSO, three different levels, or if you will. I have a high THC RSO. I have more of an even blend, and I have a low THC RSO with a lot of CBD in it. And those are, you know, depending on the battle that you're facing, you might want the stronger stuff, or if it's grandma with just little aches and pains, she might want the low THC because she really wants to not get high, but wants the relief. And then we also have delivered half-gram doses in 1 mL syringes to the market, which you can't eat that oil. It's just RSO. But a lot of late stage patients decide to use those for rectal delivery.
The process on that's significantly different, right?
It is. When we smoke or swallow cannabis, our body metabolizes, our liver metabolizes it into the form that gets us high. So when we smoke or swallow Delta 9, it becomes, I think, what they call 11-hydroxy. And that delivers to the brain and gives us the euphoric effect. When you deliver Delta 9 rectally, you step in front of the liver, so it doesn't have that metabolization effect, and it just floods the bloodstream with cannabinoids, and the receptors gobble them up before it makes it to your liver. So I've seen little old ladies that are, you know, stage 4 cancer, who've never smoked weed in their life, have no interest in getting high, do a half gram delivery a couple times, 3 times a day, even if they're, you know, really late stage. The most aggressive I see people doing is 1 every 8 hours or 3 a day. And really, most people report no head change, just almost instant body change. And it's kind of funny that, you know, I tell people over the decades I've been in the industry, I used to grow some of the best weed on the West Coast, and now I talk people into sticking my kind bud in their butt so they don't get high.
I actually remember working here with Packaging Brothers, and we had that that older woman who I drugged down here with us, arthritis, everything. I'm just going to call her Jay. And I remember you having to work that room, trying to get her to just give it a chance. Nobody here's going to judge you. Just try this. Literally walked into the bathroom, walked back out 15 seconds later, was like, I do not feel pain in my fucking hands.
Yep.
It's just amazing.
Back in the med days, it was a little different than it is now. You go look on all the restrooms now, and it says you can't even take cannabis into the restroom. So I do have a med card on my licensed facility. I am allowed to use medicinal products. I can't smoke, but you can take edibles or tinctures or topicals or RSO.
And I want to clarify, she had her medical card as well.
Yes, yeah, this was back in the OHA days. Anyway, now the laws are that a patient can use non-smokable items, according to the OLCC, in a licensed facility on camera. So I actually asked my inspector, I said, you know that when I am in pain, I deliver my medicine rectally. I said, do you really want me to do that on camera? I said, you can maybe put this sign up on my door that says I can't go in the restroom and do it. And he said, well, unfortunately, those are the rules. You can't take it in the restroom and do it. You have to do it on camera.
Did he drop trout right there?
You know, I offered to save him a USB drive of the events if he were interested, just jokingly. But fortunately, I don't really... I take my RSO at night. It helps me sleep.
Agreed.
But I just, you know, those are the rules. So you brought up back in the OHA days when, yeah, I'd give a lady a suppository and point her to the restroom and watch her come out different. Can't do that anymore, unfortunately. But the reports that I get are amazing. I mean, just yesterday I got a call from a lady who celebrated 1 year, was just celebrating her year anniversary of being seizure-free.
Jesus. No seizures.
No seizures in an entire year of using the RSO. And
but there's no medical benefit to this plant, by the way.
Right. and she previously had multiple seizures a day. Couple good friends of mine, a little older than me, I'm in my 50s, a couple of my guy friends that are in their 60s have prostate cancer. And I've gotten stories from them recently that their PSA count, which 4.0 is kind of the threshold where they start to worry, they're both below 1.0. One of them's down to 0.06. The doctors are, you know, completely impressed and amazed. And of course, they always say, we don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. Wink, wink.
Yeah, we have no clue. You're not telling us directly what's going on. But so with the RSO, do you still call it the personal massage oil? Is that?
Yes, I do. So I have the RSOs. I make tinctures, which are liquid form deliveries. So the oil, you can eat a little bit of the oil, or you can deliver large amounts rectally. Tinctures are RSO blended into MCT or fractionated coconut oil, liquid coconut oil, so that you can take a couple drops and let it go under the tongue. If you deliver that medicine sublingually and it absorbs under the tongue, same thing. It goes into the bloodstream and it avoids the metabolization. If you swallow it, a little buzz can show up. But there are a lot of people that go into dispensaries that are looking for physical relief or mental relief, not necessarily looking to get stoned and stupid.
I think the flower market tends to be more stoner-oriented, high THC numbers, that kind of things. But the products, there's definitely the medical need that's still being out there.
Well, I tell people that, you know, there's two reasons I reach for cannabis. One is for therapy. So if I'm hurting or, you know, it's bedtime or X, Y, or Z, I'll use a therapeutic product. That means I'll step in the restroom by myself, I'll do a suppository, or I'll drink some tincture, or I'll, you know, eat some oil. And that's a personal need. I need to sleep, I need to not hurt, I need this, that, or the other.
Absolutely.
Then there's recreational desires. When my friends come over to my house, no, I love sitting down with them and rolling up a joint if something tastes really good, and sitting down and smoking with my friends.
I want your shishka berry.
Yeah. And it, you know, so there's the social recreational side of cannabis that I'll choose from time to time also. But the difference is, you know, the recreational desires ebb and flow. The therapeutic desires don't. I always want to not hurt. I always want to sleep good. I always want to not be depressed. I always want the therapeutic side of cannabis. From the time I wake up until the time I go to sleep, through the time I am asleep, I want that therapeutic
I think that's why this Sober October has been a little bit challenging for me. I've only been doing the CBD at this point, and it's helping some, but it's our bodies have been cannabinoid deficient for the last 100 years since the prohibition started, and I can feel the difference.
Yeah.
So the tinctures,
And then we make what's called a personal massage oil. And the reason we call it personal massage oil is because a lot of women use it for relief during their menstrual cycles. So
I know my girlfriend has.
Yep. You know, the two main reports I get from that product are, like I said, women getting relief from a cycle. Like it's oil-based, so it doesn't really, they don't have to worry about it affecting their pH.
I was going to say, it's pH balanced as well, right?
Well, it's an oil, so pH is a water measurement.
Mm, okay.
So oils don't really affect the pH. Your pH is going to pretty much stay where it is.
Awesome.
From what I understand. Now, mind you, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, I've just been talking to those that are.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'll be honest, the first time I made this, my wife had heard that this particular product would increase her blood flow during sexual activity. So she wanted me to make a batch. So I grabbed some MCT oil and some RSO, and I stuck my pH pen in there, and it didn't work. And I took it out, and I put it in some water, and it worked. And I went back, and I put it in the oil, and it didn't work. So I called my buddy Josh in a lab, and I was like, dude, so I'm trying to blend some coconut oil and some of my RSO together, and I want the pH to be about neutral.
Yeah.
And he's a smart guy. He said, yeah, Sean, if you're trying to make that lube for your wife, you don't have to worry about it, because it's an oil. It's not going to affect pH. That's a water measurement. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, you blew my cover.
It's good to know people when they know you, right?
Yeah. So I get reports all the time of, like I said, you know, menstrual cycle pain or endometriosis. Yes, there is the enhancement aspect of it during play if women apply it internally about 20 minutes prior to activity. Years ago, I had an 82-year-old woman sit in my front office and tell me this product gave me the strongest orgasm I've had in my life.
That had to be an interesting experience to hear that story.
It brought the whole room to a halt. It was kind of comical.
I love it. Nobody should be ashamed of that, right?
No, I mean, it's just one of the benefits. It's not why I make the product. I'm not trying to get into the adult stores, but a lot of women know about that, and it is true. It increases their blood flow, elevates their sensations, and
adult stores might not be a bad avenue, though.
Nah, it's all got to go through the OLCC because it's cannabis.
CBD, could you do the same? But would that have the same result?
It doesn't have the same result.
Interesting.
No, it takes the full spectrum.
Okay.
But the real, I call it the mindset changer, because the real, the number one report I get is arthritis. So you go home, so I'll give samples to bud tenders all the time and tell them to go home and spray it on their mom's hands. And in 5 seconds, when their mom's hands don't hurt like they did, all of a sudden they change their viewpoint over the fact that their kid works in the industry.
Right.
You know, maybe there is something to this therapeutic side that you've been pitching, and it's not all about getting stoned.
I remember having this conversation with my ex. I stopped smoking for about 6 months when we first started dating, because she was convinced that I was just another stoner. I wanted to show her that, you know, it doesn't affect you that way if you don't let it affect you that way. And eventually she came around to that. She started pitching it to her parents. They're both interested in CBD products at this point. It's been a weird transition to see it kind of snowball over a year or two into this. Oh, well, maybe.
Yeah, well, I say, you know, CBD is the gateway to THC.
So marijuana is the gateway drug, right?
Gateway to, you know, healing, health. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I've used a lot of drugs in my life, and I wouldn't blame any of them on the fact that I use cannabis. I'd blame all of them on the fact that I made some really poor decisions.
Absolutely. In fact,
and it wasn't because I was stoned.
You know, what I find is amazing is the number of people I know that smoke cannabis who have never tried any other drug in their entire life.
I know a lot of people that have been, you know, abstinent their whole lives and then have come to the therapeutic side of cannabis. And then eventually we'll discover a little buzz, and you know, some of them will admit and some of them won't that it's
a lot
not that
bad. Yeah, you know, maybe. So with that, are there any new products or new things you're developing, or?
I mean, latest coming out is, like I said, I just got my extraction endorsement a couple months ago, just passed my control study.
Nice.
Took forever to get through that process. The OLCC's backlog, I think it was 22 months I was pending.
Jeez. 2 years.
But I finally got it, so we're rocking and rolling.
So that's going to be the diamonds that are starting to come out, the cartridges, things like that?
Yep. I'm going to do, I don't know about cartridges. I hear there's a lot of failure and a lot of disappointment in the market. People get home and those cartridges get clogged, or they leave them in their car in the sun and they blow out. The thing is that there's still a lot of THCA in there, so the CO2 is off-gassing in that little cartridge.
Gotcha.
And if the pressure builds up, that oil's got to go somewhere, which is out.
So, I've actually seen that happen. Forced out through the holes, clogs up the pens, things like that.
Yeah, that's because it's off-gassing and building up some pressure. So I think what I'm going to deliver to the market is just the glass pucks with, you know, diamonds in it and dabs and, you know, there are many other ways to do it.
Absolutely.
The cartridges are extremely convenient. I have a friend who's going to join forces with me. We are going to put out a straight D8, D9, that's Delta 8 and Delta 9.
Really?
Cartridge with some cannabis-derived terpenes.
I was actually thinking about a Delta 8 cartridge myself. I was trying to get it up this month. Probably going to be another one or two.
Yeah. So we're going to bring that to market here under his brand. And I have a few clients that I'm white labeling products for the market, which is kind of nice. You don't actually have to have a cannabis license to have a product on the shelf. You can hire a processor to produce it and a wholesaler to deliver it. So you don't actually have to have your hands on the product.
Interesting sales models come from that.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people that one in the industry, they have their little idea, whether it, you know, I mean, there's many different products that people want to bring to market, so I can help them do that too if, you know, if they're really serious.
That's cool.
A lot of people have an idea and then they come in and they learn about the process and the process validation expenses behind it.
Insane.
And yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty expensive to bring a new product to market. Once you've made it to market, then your study's good for a couple years, and you can take advantage of that and make your money. But it's pretty front-end loaded.
I know that the medical side, the therapeutic side, is the passion that brought you into it. And as we're getting a little bit farther into this interview, I wanted to see what other passions that you had. Anything?
It's my work and my kids. I have three kids. My boy Aaron is 12, and my middle daughter Abby is 14, and Sarah, my eldest, is 15.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
So they are, you know, due to COVID, they're homeschooled now on tech. So I get up in the morning. My job is tech support to make sure everything works. And as those parents out there know, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, my poor kid had to sit in a class the other day with a bunch of his classmates, but the teacher couldn't figure out how to log in. So he had to sit there and stare at a blank screen for 50 minutes to show that he was in class, even though the teacher couldn't make it there.
It's such a great process we have.
You know, it's a work in progress. And it's, you know, the new way of doing things. They'll get the kinks worked out, and they'll figure out a flow, and they'll figure out a way to effectively teach. I don't think we're there yet.
No, not quite yet.
I myself have, you know, migrated from going to stores and doing what we call vendor days to doing Zoom calls and talking to bud tenders, training them over the internet rather than going into stores.
Do you think they get as much from that?
Actually, I think they get more, because when I'm in a store, I don't really have their full undivided attention. I might get a customer or two who comes over, and I'll have their undivided attention, but when the customers leave and I'm trying to train the staff, well, we're constantly interrupted, and, you know, I've given them some samples and some tips to go home and try, and, you know, I go home and spray it on your mom's hands and see what she says if she's, you know, anti-cannabis and has arthritis. And so now, when I do a Zoom call, no, I have their full and undivided attention because they're in the back room and there's six or eight of them around a screen paying attention and asking their questions. And,
you know, a little bit different than the younger age kids trying to learn.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice. You know, I can hit off four corners of the state in an afternoon without leaving my office rather than...
Saves a little gas money.
It's just a little more efficient use of my time. And like I said, I have the bud tenders undivided attention while they're, you know, the other half of the staff is out front taking care of business. I have the other, you know, first half in the back of the manager's office getting trained, and then they swap. And it's, you know, I'll have samples already delivered there. I'll follow up a couple days later to see what they've thought. And once they have personal stories to tell, they share them, you know.
Everybody needs to use their voice. Get that out there, you know.
You know, the dispensaries that use the massage oil. So I'll always give a female bud tender a sample of massage oil and give her an explanation of, you know, where she can use it herself in her own life and how she can take it home and help grandma out who's anti-cannabis and give her, a couple tips. But once she goes home and, you know, experiences relief during her cycle or watches grandma's viewpoint change, then they are a mouthpiece, man. Everybody that comes in the door, like, you know, they're like, do you know this? This really helped my grandma's arthritis. They have a personal story to show.
It's all about education.
It's all about experience. I can tell you all day long.
Yes.
Okay? And, you know,
you need that at personal experience before it actually kicks in.
Yes. Because I guarantee very few people walk into a marijuana dispensary looking for, you know, menstrual cramp relief or arthritis relief.
Yeah.
But when the bud tender points it out to them, they seem to get the message across. And then when the people come back a few days later ranting and raving about how much relief they've got, and they brought their sister in who never would have come into a store because she wants to buy one too.
Yeah.
That's a victory for us.
Absolutely.
It's a victory for them, really.
It is. It changes their life in a way they didn't even think was possible.
Everyone can appreciate a little relief. A little quality of life change helps everyone.
Amen, brother. So along with that, definitely passions on that side. What about any strangeness, any psychedelics, any conspiracy theories you crack out on, any randomness you still do, or you just don't have time?
You know, I try not. You know, I try not to buy into all this plandemic, as I call it.
Oh, I remember seeing that poster.
Fear. You know, society has changed greatly due to COVID, and it really breaks my heart. I see people, they look like deer in headlights now, and they're scared.
Yeah, and absolutely.
That tears me up. You know, I used to watch a lot of news because it would be informative, and I don't watch the news anymore. It's all brainwashing, in my opinion.
They're also, you know, any story that actually needs to be addressed, it disappears instantly, and it's all the same headlines all over the place arguing the same points.
I know. You flip one channel, you get one side of the coin. You flip to the next channel, you get the other side of the coin.
And neither one ever finds the middle or any compromise.
No, they're all trying to paint their agenda.
Ugh.
So, you know, I don't really buy into the conspiracy theorists, and I don't really put a lot of energy into that. It is what it is. I don't necessarily think this was, you know, a mistake that made it out of Wuhan. But, you know, like I said, it is what it is, and we all have to adapt. Got to wear a mask wherever I go now.
So weird. I still catch myself walking and having to grab it out of my pocket before I get into a store.
Oh, yeah. It's not become...
second nature?
It hasn't become second nature. It's definitely something I have to think about and remind myself about. And, you know, I have my own beliefs, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the other people around me believe the same. So I have to, you know, respect their boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wear my mask, keep my distance. I'm a big hugger, which sucks.
Oh, God, I know. One of the few people I gave a hug to again. We have to be able to trust where you're at in yourself. If you're not vulnerable, if you're not around a vulnerable population as much, at some point we're going to have to make our own decisions about what risks we have to take and what we can and cannot do, right?
Yeah, well, social distancing for social creatures does not work well.
Than we are. I mean, we are the most social creatures.
Yep. You know, drug abuse is going up. Suicide rates going up.
Alcohol sales have increased since everybody's been unemployed. All of the bars are closed. Nobody can drink out there. And we're drinking more alcohol than ever.
Yeah.
I wish more people would realize the offsetting ability with cannabis on there. And the difference in mindset you get versus alcohol is insane.
Yeah, the difference. I mean, cannabis is more calming. Everything else is more, you know, takes me out of my persona. Takes me out of...
Absolutely.
You know, out of touch with who I am.
I've always thought that cannabis has a way of making you more about who you are. So if you've got a stoner mentality, you end up a little bit more stoner-like. You smoke a little too much, and that's that where we got that stereotype from. But people like us who have that IT mentality, who actually have a work ethic, we don't necessarily get to that stoner mentality the same way. You just kind of get a little bit calmer, and you can focus a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not looking for escape.
Yeah.
It's not an escape drug. It's definitely therapeutic and social.
So
I can smoke all day and I'm fine, but if I drank all day, I'm going to pass out by noon.
I hope I'm not blowing you up here too much. I can always edit, but I'm going to try not to. You actually were one of the people that introduced me to plant medicine as well. And I include... mushrooms as the big opener for me there, but also acid. And was there something that you feel people get from that therapy as well? Is that starting to near legalization?
You know, the legislation is bringing on microdosing possibilities. And although I believe there may be some therapy there, I'm the guy that has the opposite view. I'm the, you know, overdosing type of guy.
Really?
Well, for cannabis, for example, you know, little old ladies in bad shape.
Mm.
I would, you know, would love to see them do half a gram of RSO rectally, which is, you know, 200, 250 milligrams of THC. That's a huge amount.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I mean, we both eat 6,000-7,000 milligrams at times.
Yeah, I accidentally ate a 10-gram tube once.
Oh, man, I can't. That had to be a bad couple of days.
No, actually, it was about 24 hours of just sheer hunger. I mean, literally, I ate and ate and ate. I had a grow down in Roseburg, was living in Eugene, and that's where we made the oil. And I asked my lead, you know, how the oil turned out and what our yield was, and he told me, and I said, well, let me taste it. So he went into the trailer and grabbed a 10-gram tube, which is usually really thick, viscous oil.
Is it still warm or something?
Well, it was the middle of summer in a trailer, so I wasn't thinking. When I turned that tube upside down and hit the plunger, it just all emptied into my mouth.
You can't spit that out.
And I kind of went into panic mode and, you know, told my friend, dude, drive me home. Go as fast as you can. I'll pay any speeding tickets. This is going to be miserable. I know. In an hour, I'm through. Well, we got down off the mountain, and then we're getting into Roseburg, and I was like, dude, stop at McDonald's. So we stopped at McDonald's, and I got a full meal, and I was like, now hit the freeway and do 120. We're flying up the freeway, and we get into Crestwell. I'm like, dude, stop at Wendy's. He looked at me like, what? I was like, I'm starving. So we stopped at Wendy's. I got another meal. We got home. I wasn't supposed to be home that early, so the pizza guy is just walking out the driveway, and I walked in and ate, you know, half my family's dinner. I remember, like, 6 o'clock in the morning that next morning, still up, shoveling cereal in my mouth. I don't even like cereal, but I just couldn't stop eating. But I didn't really get high from it, which surprised me. I'd been taking it for probably a year or two at that point, but never in that amount.
Long enough that it affected your body's processes, but not your mental processes? Mm-hmm. All right. I've noticed that after I eat RSO for a while, my head change doesn't happen. I get the body change. Yep.
Yeah, I eat half a gram to a gram on a nightly basis, and I don't really get that head change. You know, I sleep good, and, you know, my aches and pains, and because, you know, I'm old. I've injured myself. I have aches and pains that I've made friends with. And if I don't eat oil before I go to bed at night, you know, it wakes me up 6 times during the night, the pain in my hip or the pain in my back or something. But if I eat oil, man, I sleep like a baby, and I wake up in the morning and I don't hurt. So I've just made it a habit to keep eating oil.
So that's definitely not a microdose situation, more of a macro dose.
For sure.
With the psilocybin, have you tried both?
I mean, I've tried psilocybin and LSD back away. I mean, Jesus, I work for the Grateful Dead. Of course I tried LSD. I don't know. I don't know if this microdosing is really going to help. I think it might help those that are inexperienced. But for somebody like me, a couple of, you know, mics of LSD, I don't really think it's going to do much of a change because I'm so used to taking much more back when I used to do that.
Was there any benefit you feel you got from those bigger doses back in the day?
Oh, for sure.
Like, give some people some examples. So many people don't have any psychedelic experience.
So when I worked for the Dead and during Country Fair, I was known for taking, you know, large amounts of LSD. and then going into my tent and just, you know, enjoying the introspective side of it, not the social side of it. And I'd come out of the tent a different person, you know. I'd see my life a little more clearly. I'd see the obstacles that were in my way, the obstacles I was putting in my own way. I would just see my life a little more clearly and have a different perspective the next day. We didn't have Country Fair this year, unfortunately.
I know.
And I haven't really been able to use that escape since 5 years ago when we bought our house, which is one of the Country Fair campgrounds.
Absolutely. One of the best, by the way.
Thank you.
Family friendly as well.
Family friendly, and we spoil the hell out of our campers.
Oh, my God, do you?
But now I'm a camp host, so I can't be all balls to the wall high. And I'm okay with that. You
know? But probably not wise.
I'm in a good space in my life. I'm really happy, you know? I have a great family
not
life.
Not needing that kind of an escape or even that realization anymore. You're on the yeah. path. Do you think it would help people see their path clearer?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I definitely know it helped me. It's also, I've had a couple experiences that were probably a little too strong. One of which at a hemp fest is what I think was the catalyst, not just to continue with Awaken Vapes and Awaken Exchanges, the podcast and everything here, but probably hurt my then fiance and I significantly because we were on different planes of existence there for a couple of hours. Yeah. And sometimes you can't explain that in a way. You can't get them to see what you've seen or felt.
You cannot explain an acid trip. You can't put words on it. It's a feeling you walk away with.
And I think that's true because it's that feeling that that changes you. It's not, once you explain it, you're stuck with the explanation as opposed to that the feeling.
Yeah, the realization.
Yes, the realization. That's a great word for it. So if, the last country fair for me was the 50th anniversary. Yeah. Yeah, last one for everybody. But it was also probably the best for me as well. Just simply having that experience, being there with somebody who also was having an experience. Got to meet and talk with Patch Adams a little bit, who is an amazing character. I still cannot believe, with as much as Jeff Bezos or fucking Bill Gates is worth, they can't fund a $300 million hospital, which is less than 0.1% of their fucking net worth. These are people trying to make a huge change, you know? It's interesting how much we're not paying attention to as well.
Yep.
But I guess... moving on from that, we go into this little section that I guess I've been calling the moment of vulnerability over here and trying to get people to open up and use their voice to help others open up. What motivates you in life?
You know, that's kind of hard to answer.
Like absolutely.
I said, I grew up in Marin County. I was raised in a materialistic world, and I was taught that, you know, a man is measured, your success is measured by your bank account.
I have a friend who still thinks he needs to have a $2 million car to be successful.
Yeah. But when the doctor told me I had a year or two to live, that totally changed my viewpoint. My friends, my family.
You had your kids all by that point, right?
Not all of them.
No? Aaron wasn't?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, Aaron is, well, I guess.
I thought he was just born, maybe right at that point.
Well, not. I was diagnosed in 05, and then
okay.
Sarah was born in 04.
Okay, wow.
So, yeah, Aaron was born in 08, so.
Right in the middle of it all.
Yeah, they all came before RSO, but they've all been raised with me educating people, and, you know, my eldest, who's 15, I asked her the other day, well, that was a couple months ago, you know, I said, you know, do you have any interest in using cannabis? I know, you know, you're of that age. And one of the most proud moments of a dad, she looked me dead in the eyes and she said, Dad, I hope I'm never sick enough that I need to.
That is fucking amazing. I am so proud to hear that being open with kids, it takes that stigma away.
Yeah.
You start to realize that it is about teaching them the right ways instead of just fucking, oh, well, this is taboo. I've got to go find out what's wrong with this, right?
Yeah. They don't. They definitely grew up in a different vibe than I did.
Absolutely.
You know, they've seen my gardens. They've seen, we have our personal plants at home that line our driveway. They know cannabis very well. They know the process. My son is very interested in the science side of the lab, so we spent a couple hours talking about solvents the other night.
Really?
It's kind of cool.
That's awesome.
You know,
what does he want to do? Is he looking at science?
He's looking at, he's 12 years old, and the day he's 21, I retire, and he takes over.
Go him! He is already on that path.
Oh, yeah. He
He's a smart little kid too, man.
He's pretty smart. You know, no interest in cannabis, especially at 12, but interest in the business and interest in the science and interest in, you know, he asked me a lot about the finance, you know.
Trying to understand the numbers because most parents don't talk about finances. I mean, when I was growing up, it was, you held that in. I didn't have any clue we were poor.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like the other day, it's harvest time, and it was kind of cute, but I was like, yeah, man, we had so many people working, and I had to rent a truck, and this and that and the other, and he just looks at me, and he says, so what was your labor bill for that day?
Wow, man, he is listening to you, isn't he?
You know, and when I told him, his jaw hit the floor.
Oh, I don't even want to know.
You know, it's harvest time, man.
Oh my God,
it's thousands of dollars a day in labor.
You are helping employ people in a time where employment is so fucking scarce too. It makes a huge difference, and that I've noticed the cannabis industry is one of the few places that is actually still hiring people instead of firing people during this pandemic.
Yeah, I just hired a crew of 10 for a temporary couple weeks worth of work just to get the field down.
Isn't it amazing how fast we went from illegal to necessity?
Oh yeah. I joke that, you know, in today's day, you can have weed delivered to you to your car in the parking lot of a dispensary, but you got to go in a back alley to do a black market deal to get your hair cut.
God, I got so lucky. I got a haircut the day before they closed them, and I still had to give myself a haircut before I got another one back out there. Oh, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, people have COVID hair. It's kind of cute. Like, dude, you needed a haircut like a month ago.
All right, so if that's what motivates you, what kind of stuff scares you?
Not a whole lot, you know. I'm pretty confident on the road that I'm on.
Did you have fears early on in the career, or pre-diagnosis fears?
The front end of this is pretty heavy as far as finances go. So I had to spend a lot of money to get my farm going, to get my labs going. You know, six figures easily.
How did you overcome that fear of, I finally have this money coming in, but am I going to let it hold me back, or do I have to still put out more to be successful?
Well, I mean, it was my own personal finances. Before I got sick, I was pretty successful. So it was my own personal finances that got us up off the ground. It was my own personal finances that funded all the med grows throughout the years.
Absolutely.
And then it was my own finances that, you know, got my farm and my labs here, my building here.
It had to. Thank God you didn't need, you know, financing from anybody. It's not like you can go to a bank.
Well, I could. I wouldn't tell them it was for cannabis, but, you know, I have enough assets. I could go get a loan if I needed to.
All right. There's not many of us are in that kind of a position.
True.
For sure.
But I wouldn't want to. That would scare me.
I bet.
I want to, you know, I kind of shoestringed it on my own budget and built it into what it is. And, you know, now it's a very large, successful company with, you know, dozens of employees.
And with those financial strings, if you were to go to a bank, like you said, that just brings a whole lot more complications to the table.
Actually, so, you know, let's just take cannabis off the table. First and foremost, I am a successful businessman, and I have a strong business acumen. And, you know, I think the fact that the feds won't let us bank is just stupid. It's encouraging, you know, diversion.
The black market, the gray market.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
They don't make us legit. Man, let me take a check. Let me process credit cards.
Let us pay taxes.
Well, we do. But, you know, this metric doesn't track the finance. So if we had a bank account, things would just be so much easier for us as far as, you know, conducting business. And the government would know the revenue that's coming in. Whereas I'm sure there's a lot of people that hide a lot of money because they can, because this is all, you know, a cash industry.
Oh my God, I didn't even really think about it from that side of it. I forget that people have those different motivations and those different little things. I have seen a few owners in my time who ask as few questions as possible. Do you still think that's as rampant right now, or is it kind of weeding itself out, pun not intended?
I think it's weeding itself out. A lot of people have thrown in the towel because the market's fallen out over the past few years.
Thousands of acres of hemp not being grown this year.
Thank God.
Oh, my God. A lot of people just figured it was an easy thing to do, shove it out there, and they end up with moldy product that they still sell to the market without telling anybody.
Yeah, well, what it was, you know, last year, a lot of people heard about the bubble that existed the year before.
Yeah.
And they all wanted to get in on that. Well, I mean, you know, I think it was 2008 was the real estate glut.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like we can go take advantage of that today.
Exactly.
Real estate is real strong right now.
It is, surprisingly.
I know.
It hasn't seen, especially Portland. I've been getting cash offers for my fucking house, and I'm like, I don't understand, but I'm good right now.
Where that comes from is you got to realize there's thousands and thousands of displaced Oregonians from the fires that we've had.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really. Highway 22 is still closed. You can't get over to Bend from this way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, housing has become in short supply, high demand. But like I said, you know, back to the cannabis, if they let us bank, that would just make it more of a legitimate business and, you know, prevent a lot of the cash diversion that I'm sure is going on out there.
Do you think, because they've been talking about it for a long-ass time at this point, do you think that it's actually going to come to fruition in the foreseeable future?
You know, I don't know. My rule is always chase the money, follow the money. And the fact that, you know, they're not letting us bank, and they're not going to see the money, so they can't follow it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole reason that Oregon let recreational come into play was because they wanted their 20% sales tax.
Absolutely.
We're in a no sales tax state, but they want a 20% sales tax on all the product. And then when hemp came to market, for some reason the OLCC decided to make that a tax-free product, which made no sense to me. And if it's in a dispensary, I think they would want their money. But for some reason, they view hemp to be different than, you know, cannabis. And it's all cannabis. It's just different levels of THC. So I tell people that, you know, I grow bud, and these hemp farmers grow Bud Light.
And it's basically Mitch McConnell and his cronies trying to keep that legal for a very specific subset of people that is kind of holding things up, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. You know, once again, follow the money.
Who's profiting?
So I think, you know, if the feds were smart, they'd let us bank because they would keep better track of the cash flow.
So we've also talked, you've given us a couple of pretty life-changing moments in there, the diagnosis being the major one propelling you into this. What other game-changing moments earlier in your life? What headed you down this route?
Well, after I healed myself, I had plenty left over, so I gave it to a friend of mine who was a elderly farmer in his 70s who had prostate cancer that was so bad that it caused pain in his stomach. He went to the doctor, and the doctor said there was nothing he could do. He'd be dead within a month, so I had him come down. I gave him a bunch of oil. I told him to go home and start eating it, and he was going to be really he never smoked weed in his life.
Oh,
I said he was going to be pretty uncomfortable for probably a couple of weeks, but what did he have to lose other than, you know, not dying in a month?
Yeah, right. Nothing to lose but your disease.
Yeah, 9 weeks to the day after his first dose, he walked into his doctor, and his doctor was surprised to see him. Stayed late, took scans of him, and cancer had disappeared.
In 9 weeks?
9 weeks.
That's fucking amazing. If I actually know a side story from the early days. My grandpa had a garden up in Hood River, or across from Hood River, up on the Washington side, and he is actually what kind of gave me a little bit of my green thumb. He taught me a little bit of that kind of stuff. He didn't grow any cannabis. Had no clue. Turns out, sometime in the 80s, he had a cancer patient friend, and he actually grew cannabis. Then I find out that my uncle also has grown cannabis. So now all of a sudden, without knowing it, these West Virginia moonshiner people that I came from have now turned me into a third generation cannabis grower. And all on the therapeutic side as well. We all got into it for medical reasons, even in the illegality of it. It's just amazing that so many people feel compelled to help and share this plant.
Yeah.
So that's a big game changer. Let's see. What about pre-cannabis game changers?
I mean, I was pretty much on my set path before.
The IT world before?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. IT is where I made my fame and fortune.
How did you switch into Duke? How did you and Duke meet again?
Oh, I met him when I was 16.
Oh, wow. So he was already in it, and he just kind of has said, hey, Sean.
Well, we were outlaws back then.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, this was P96. And I really never thought cannabis should be illegal. You know, I thought all the hard drugs definitely should have been, but I never thought cannabis was, you know.
It's a plant.
There's no LD50 on it. You can smoke it all day long. You won't hurt yourself.
You have to eat, like a ton and a half or some crap?
Yeah, some ridiculous, impossible amount. And, you know, like I said, IT is where I made my money, and cannabis is where I express my compassion. After helping a couple people and watching the miracles happen right before my eyes, then that motivated me to grow on a larger scale and produce, become a bigger producer. That motivated me to go into the lab and figure out how to make the best possible RSO I could. That's why I have all the trophies on the shelf. Every contest I've entered, every one of my products has taken a first place trophy somewhere. Every RSO contest I've entered, I've taken a first place trophy. Hemp Fest all the years, 15, 16, 17, 18. Bud Fest was a couple years. Culminated in 2018, I took first place High Times Dope Cup.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. At that point, I pretty much stopped entering contests. I'd proven to myself that I, you know, had achieved my goal of making
absolutely
the best quality, which isn't necessarily the largest yield, but the best quality there is.
Quality is key.
It is.
Well, we've talked about Duke, we've talked about Jerry, very influential people in your lives. Is there any other influential people you think changed the course of your life?
No, my wife and my kids.
And how you and your wife met when?
We met when I was in the Midwest. It was probably September, October. I think I met her right after the raid, so it was like October of 2002. By December of 2002, we were out here in Oregon so I could land this job with Dell.
It's so weird to think that you guys were only together a few years before I met you. You guys have just been an example of a fairly strong couple that I've always looked up to, your communication styles. And you don't hesitate to tell each other your real feelings. Let's go there.
Maybe she yells and I listen.
On occasion.
My wife is definitely a very strong-willed person. I love her a lot. She is the yang to my yang. You know, she's very protective of the children and very supportive of the children and very supportive of my insanity.
And for good reason at this point. You guys have proven it to each other.
You know, any relationship is a give and take, so we support each other really well.
I'm really happy to hear that.
I need somebody in my corner, and that's her.
She's your rock. If you need somebody, she's there. If she needs somebody, you're there. I've seen it. So, do you have a personal philosophy on life? There's a question for you.
You know, just do whatever it is that makes you happy. When I was a little kid, you know, parents run around and they say, John, tell people what you want to be when you grow up. And my parents used to do that to me. And when I was 5 or 6 years old, they'd run around and I can remember it. They'd say, Sean, tell John what you want to be when you grow up. And I'd look at you and I'd say, when I grow up, I want to be happy.
I love that.
You know, and I've carried that with me. I, you know, got misguided by living in Marin County, thinking that, you know, your bank account was, you know, contingent on your level of happiness. And I had, you know, all the cars, all the houses, all the women, all the drugs, all the everything. That's not what made me happy. What makes me happy today is, like yesterday, some lady I don't even know calling me and telling me that she's celebrating a year of her life being changed.
You've changed a lot of lives.
Not me, man. Cannabis. I'm just a conduit.
You've helped bring that to a lot of people and opened a lot of eyes. How about that?
I'll take that. But I got to keep my ego out of this.
That's right. It's not about that. It's about the helping. It's not, oh, look at what I've done. And that's what I really love about you. It's about, look what I can still do. Let's get it out there more. Let's help more people.
Yep.
There's not many people who think that way.
No. A lot of people are like I used to be. They just look at what's in the personal gain column.
So, basic philosophy then would be follow your heart, not your wallet.
Yeah.
Any advice for people who realize that's hard to do when you're trying to pay bills? Will the money follow?
You know, I tell my kids that if you find something that you really enjoy, that you're passionate about, and you can find a way to turn that into a profession, you'll be successful. I have friends that are, you know, I have a friend that's a surgeon. Okay, he makes incredible money. He fucking hates it. Okay, he goes home, he drinks every night, he doesn't have a happy life. He's like,
even though he's helping people,
he's on his like third marriage.
Oh.
He's not happy. He has a mansion in Tiburon and drives really expensive cars and has, you know, achieved the social level of success, but he's miserable. And he recently started taking up going out to what we used to call Sears Point. I don't know what the guy, I think it's Infineon now, the racetrack. Bought a race car and is learning to become a race car driver at, you know, 60.
Actually getting to follow a little bit of a passion.
And he, you know, he says that's what, when he wakes up and he's going to the track that day, he's super excited and jacked to go. And I said, you know, too bad you didn't, you know, use your parents' money to buy a race car instead of put you through med school back in the day, because maybe you'd be another Earnhardt and, you know, doing your passion. So really my advice is, you know, find what makes you feel good, and then find out how to turn that into a profession.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and take this quick moment to thank you for helping me follow mine. Every time I've needed a push in the right direction or somebody to talk to, you've kind of said, all right, well, have you tried this? Can you go this route? All of a sudden, the vape cartridges are building up, the podcast is building up, all these things that I've been scared to try because of finances have fallen into my lap and turned it into that success you're talking about. It's starting to really follow that heart and put everything I have into it, and the universe is opening itself up.
Yep.
Any last words, any things you'd like to share, personal shout outs, new products, anything?
Not really. I mean, I've enjoyed this conversation with you. You know, people that are looking for some therapy can find it in cannabis. Probably a lot better than in pharmaceuticals. You know, I injured myself a while ago, and I spent one day taking pain pills because I was in incredible pain. and it didn't do a damn thing. And my wife just walked into me, and she's like, you don't look like you're feeling any better. I was like, I'm not. I'm high as fucking hell, but I don't hurt any less. And she's like, why don't you just go do a suppository? And, like, the light bulb went off in my head. It's like, you know, I'm the last one to think.
Yeah.
Why didn't I reach for that? So I went and I did a suppository, came back, and my pain level was, you know, down in 10% of what it was 5 minutes ago. And then I had to lay there in bed all stoned and stupid on the Vicodin or whatever the hell they gave me.
Yay, opioids, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't bother taking any more because they just didn't work for me. But the cannabis helped. The cannabis helped the pain. I ate a bunch because I know I ate a bunch because I was kind of slurring my words a little bit. But I slept good that night, and, you know, I took a pretty serious fall, and I'm in my 50s, and, you know, old people aren't supposed to fall.
Yeah.
And still a little sore from it, but it's not that bad. Had I not been using RSO, I believe. Or even worse, had I been taking pain pills, I'd just be so stoned I can't drive, but didn't really do anything for my pain. Just kind of, you know, inhibited me.
So, I'm glad you don't have to go that route anymore.
Yeah, me too. So I just rely on my own meds. I take my RSO, tinctures, the topical works great. Like I said, when I twisted my back, my wife would rub that into my back, and I could just feel the warmth. And that's not the product. That's the inflammation going down right before my eyes. You know, there is a miracle in the cannabis plant somewhere. They don't know where it is. I'm grateful for that, because if they did, they just take it from us and synthesize it and give us an inferior product at $99 a pill.
Marinol works so well when it's straight THC, because you don't need any of that entourage effect.
Well, that's the whole thing. There's, you know, they say there's 150 cannabinoids or some incredible number.
Identified.
But they only know how to test for, you know, 10 or 12 of them.
And that's at the top of the top labs with the standards for it.
Yeah. You know, most things are just described in their THC and CBD level. And I say that, you know, looking at the THC and CBD in a whole plant product, which has all the cannabinoids, is like trying to describe a color wheel by picking two colors.
And then you just forget all about the terpenes on that side of it, too. People don't even realize how important the terpene profiles are.
True.
It's just crazy.
Yep. When people go to, you know, flowers, I tell them, you know, your nose knows.
That's the phrase I still use to this day.
Yep.
If you actually smell it, it smells good to you, your body's probably craving that.
Yeah. And if I smell it and I don't like it, I don't want to smoke it.
I don't like the skunks. I'm sorry. I know people that just love that. They're drawn right to that. It's just...
I would kill for the old school skunk. If anybody out there knows how to get their hands on roadkill skunk, reach out to me. Sean at Genesis Farms.
Please. Well, thank you, Sean. Thank you for making time here.
Thank you, John.
To have you back again.
Yeah.
You are an inspiration, and I really appreciate having you in my life.
Appreciate you too, my friend.
Thank you, everybody. We'll be back next week.
Happy healing.
Thank you again for listening. I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you're listening, and please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Every podcast says that because it really does help. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.